Blog Talk Radio.
Never an honest word, but that was when I ruled the world. Hopefully we'll have old man Barack Hussein Obama saying that very same thing not so very long from now. He will be on his way out. Now, good evening, folks. I hope everyone had a great weekend. Thank you for tuning in to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report with me, your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Date. Oh, yeah. August 13th, 2012. Beautiful Old Town Alexandria is where I am, looking across my palatial villa. Oh, just across the park here, I can see the beautiful Watergate Hotel across the Potomac and deep into Washington, D.C., if there weren't so many trees in front of my window and over in the park. But hey, I had a great time today. I took a little stroll out on King Street, visited the Starbucks over on King and Union. I had a triple venti white mocha, which is why I am speaking so very rapidly and just perspiring just a bit for you ladies out there who like that kind of thing. Hey, I woke up Saturday morning my usual time, about 4:30, 4:35. My iPhone was buzzing. I got the news. And the news wasn't good. An alert that said to me that Mitt Romney had chosen his running mate, and his running mate is Paul Ryan. And I thought, oh, no. No. And I promptly rolled over and tried to go back to sleep. I pulled the covers over my head, and I was like, okay, is this a dream? Is somebody playing a prank on me, Dr. C. Robert Jones, at this hour? I was nonpulsed. I was, I wasn't happy. I said to myself, self, we're going to get our asses kicked. It's over. And the best we can hope for is the Senate. We'll keep the House. Well, that there's no doubt, but we need the Senate now because we're done. And then later on in the morning, I sort of started to give some thought to the whole thing. And then I said, you know, before I pass judgment on this whole election and give up, I'll take an opportunity to familiarize myself more with Paul Ryan. And so here's what I find. I have a clip here of the very best of Paul Ryan, and I'd like you to take a listen. Maybe there's hope. Maybe there's a little hope. Take a listen.
Well, because I put out a budget plan to get the consensus of one person in Congress, me. I didn't put out a budget plan to get the consensus of a majority of Congress. But here's the point, what I was trying to get with this plan. I was trying to get this discussion about entitlements and our debt crisis at an adult level. Clearly, that's not happening. Right. I want to give younger people the option of having the same retirement you and I have, Debbie, if they want it or not.
Then we need to
that's not privatizing.
Security,
that's
not yank the rug out from under them. Investing in the stock market is a risky gamble.
Is it good for you and me and our families? Why isn't it good
it's
for everybody
certainly
else?
Certainly not good.
Here's the point. If you can let me, because this is your time, so it'll just take a long time.
Okay.
Here's the point. Leaders are supposed to fix problems. We have a $99.4 trillion unfunded liability. Our government is making promises to Americans that it has no way of accounting for them. You're showing that you have no plan to get this debt under control. You're saying we'll stabilize it, but then it's just going to shoot back up. And so my argument is, that's Europe.
We're not coming before you today to say we have a definitive solution to that long-term problem. What we do know is we don't like yours.
We spend too much of our time and our intellectual effort measuring compassion for those in need by measuring inputs. How much money are we spending? How much money are we increasing spending? How many programs are we creating? But we're not measuring outcomes. Are these programs working? Are people getting out of poverty?
The growth rate of Medicare under this budget is the same one the president proposes in his budget. So for the chart my friend from Maryland used about saying this is what the Republican budget does to growing Medicare out in the future, it's the same one President Obama proposes. Here's the difference. President Obama, in his law, the one being debated over at the Supreme Court, says 15 unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats will be in charge of putting price controls and cuts to Medicare to accommodate that growth rate, versus our plan to put 50 million seniors in charge of choosing what health care plan is best for them. So if we're talking about who's saving and strengthening Medicare, it is this budget as opposed to the status quo, which raids it, rations it, and still allows the program to go bankrupt.
The American taxpayer might want to know that government estimators are telling us that this bill will cost $1 to $2 trillion in a new health care entitlement, which will surely add more deficit and debt to future generations. The shame of all of this, Mr. Speaker, is that we could fix what's broken in health care without breaking what's working in health care.
Yeah, the difference is this. We don't think all the answers lie in Washington regulating all of this. So the problem with the approach we're seeing that you're offering, which I do believe, Senator, is very different than what we're saying, is we don't want to have sit in Washington and mandate all of these things. So what you're doing is you're defining exactly what kind of health insurance people can have. You're mandating them to buy this kind of health insurance. And so first, a little bit about CBO. I work with them every single day. Very good people, great professionals. They do their jobs well. But their job is to score what is placed in front of them. And what has been placed in front of them is a bill that is full of gimmicks and smoke and mirrors.
Okay, that is Paul Ryan. He's a really smart guy. He thinks things through. He thinks about the overall consequences. He's a nuts and bolts guy. 2020's in the house. All right, he's a nuts and bolts guy. He's the kind of guy who's going to go ahead and he's not. You know, most Americans. I think it was David Graham, my good friend David Graham, the author of Stay Mad, the book Stay Mad. He said that he had spoken to his mama, and his mama said that she was more inclined, and I'm paraphrasing, to vote for Barack Obama because Mitt Romney killed somebody's wife or was responsible for the death of somebody's wife or closed some factories down and somebody's wife died. And no disrespect to David's mom, but most Americans, a lot of Americans rather, not most, think on the surface. They're surface folks. So they're thinking about what they see right in front of them and are not at all inclined to go underneath the hood and get out the truth. You know, we think in 30-second sound bites. And unfortunately, Barack Obama is very good at putting out these 30-second sound bites and boom. It's like a hit-and-run tactic. He puts them out there, and folks, just because they like him, you know, or maybe because they think he's president, and of course he's not going to lie to you because he's the president. Why would he lie about a thing like that? But in Paul Ryan, you have a man who's thinking the whole thing through. If more Americans thought like Paul Ryan, Barack Obama's poll numbers would be down in the low teens, and Mitt Romney would cruise on into the White House. Game over. Done. Done deal. It's all over. But that's not how it works. You know, there's a story about a young man who comes home one day and says to his father, "Dad, I know who I am and what I want to do with my life. I'm a sea captain." The father looks at him and says, "Son, you know you're a sea captain, and I know you're a sea captain, but do sea captains know you're a sea captain?" There's a political corollary that goes something like this. You know Barack Obama's a crook and a failure and unfit to be president. And I know Barack Obama is a crook and a failure and unfit to be president. But do a majority of American voters know Barack Obama is a crook and a failure and unfit to be president? That is taken from a line in The American Thinker, The Real Danger of Obama's Campaign Strategy, written by Greg Lewis. And he's right. Do the majority of Americans know who Barack Obama is and what his vision is for this country? And if so, do they actually care? Do they care? In other words, the big risk is that this election is thinking that a majority of Americans see the president's race as we conservatives see it, the presidential race, sorry. Not his race. And that there's a disturbing that they are as disturbed by the tone and tactics of the Obama campaign as we are. But if we take a closer look at what most American, liberal and conservative are seeing, it should be a wake-up call to all of us. So perhaps I'm not as disappointed in the matchup coming just a couple of months from now, just in November. Maybe Americans will become more engaged in the process. Maybe. So, we've got a lot of stuff going on. A lot of stuff going on. And I listened to Paul Ryan's acceptance speech Saturday morning, and I was encouraged. Yeah, sure, I wanted Marco Rubio. I sure did. In the worst way. I thought that, you know, Marco Rubio would seal this deal. You know, I often joked on other broadcasts that what America needs right now more than anything is just two average, or maybe above average, white guys. We've done the whole thing with trying to get a woman in office. We got ourselves a partial black affirmative action hire for sure. And we've done that. We've experimented a little bit. Yeah, sure, that's what America's all about. Everybody getting a fair shot. Right? And Obama had his shot. Okay, now America, you can say that you put a black man in office. And this whole idea that we'll never, you know, America will never see a black president, we're too racist. Okay, we've been there, we've done that. It's time for a guy to go home now. All right? Let's get another black guy in another 20 or 30 years when America's, you know, back on good footing again. But right now, it's time to go back to the two old white guys. Besides, although I'm not completely sold on Paul Ryan, he's kind of reminding me of a young Reagan. And Mitt and Paul kind of look like kin, don't they? Someone joked earlier that they could be like a father and son. They got the whole father and son thing happening. So, what do you think? Paul Ryan, he's our guy. I don't know, folks. I don't know. Let's take a listen. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is an embarrassment. And I love it. She's an embarrassment to Democrats. Now, I hear personally, everybody hates her guts. Nobody likes the woman at all. How the hell she got elected is beside, you know, the B word, it's just way too mild for that woman. She strains the boundaries of credibility. It's amazing. I mean, the fact that the woman speaks with a straight face and says some of the things she says, and she doesn't even crack a smile. You know how sometimes you lie and you know you're lying and the person knows that you know that they know that you know that they know you're lying and you still lie and you just kind of get like a sly grin on your face? I've been there many times. She doesn't even do that. Take a listen to this. It's outrageous.
It's So the question is, just to be precise, he does call for some dramatic changes for people 54 and under, but anyone who is 55 or older or any senior living in Florida right now, they have absolutely nothing to worry about if his plan were to be approved, because it would not affect them at all. You accept that, right?
No. Paul Ryan's views 2 years ago on Medicare and how we can shore it up and preserve it for future generations were extreme and wrong then, and they are extreme and wrong now, and even made even worse by the fact that now they're in charge of the House of Representatives. And actually, if Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan became president and vice president of the United States, they'd be able to end the Medicare guarantee, shred the health care safety net that Medicare has provided for more than 50 years, and turn Medicare into a voucher program, leaving seniors really out in the cold, because as health care costs grow larger than the voucher provides, seniors wouldn't have enough money to cover their health care costs. And we know that the Romney-Ryan plan would increase Medicare premiums by $6,300 each year for seniors. Well, so
he's not calling for any changes for anyone who's 55 or older, including anyone who's on Medicare right now. Those changes, let's say we accept all those, the description you had of all of those changes, that affects people
right
10 years from now, let's say 65 or 67, when they're eligible for Medicare, but it doesn't impact anyone who's receiving Medicare right now or those who have 10 years to go, 55 and older.
It certainly does, and I'll tell you how.
If you're 56, 57, or 83 years old, how do his recommendations for those under 55 impact them?
I'm happy to. First of all, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan presume that the people who are younger than 65 years old, who have spent decades in their working life,
he says 55.
Okay, so 55 and younger. We'll start with that age. Those people have spent decades paying into Medicare. And because of the arbitrary cutoff of 55 years old that Romney and Ryan have established, that means that we would no longer, for those people, have Medicare be a guarantee. Instead, we would shred that safety net. It would no longer be a guarantee. It would be a voucher. They'd pay more than $6,000 more in premiums to pay for their Medicare coverage. And because healthcare costs often rise higher than that voucher would at a faster rate, the voucher wouldn't provide for all the healthcare costs.
That would affect only for people who are under 55 right now, current recipients of Medicare.
Okay. Why do we presume?
His proposal, and he spelled it out in the House Budget Committee. He's the chairman of that committee. He says there would be absolutely no change for any. You're familiar with his recommendations that no one over 55 would be impacted by his recommended changes.
Okay, here's how, though. As I said, because first of all, we do care that we have a safety net in place in healthcare for people who are 65 now, and for people as they turn 65. We made a decision in the 1960s.
But they would continue to have that
safety
net.
No, they wouldn't, because
he says that anybody over 55 is still going to receive exactly the same Medicare that they receive right now.
Okay, but Wolf, their plan ends Medicare as we know it.
For people under 55 years old.
Yes, and that's not okay. It isn't okay.
That's a legitimate debate. I just wanted to make sure that you and he were on the same page, that the changes he's recommending will affect younger people, not necessarily those who are currently on Medicare or those about to get Medicare.
All right, Debbie just kind of lost her way there. In fact, I find the fact that her name is Debbie Wasserman and then Schultz to be a bit of an oxymoron. I mean, Schultz is a German name. Now, I know they're German Jews, but Debbie Wasserman Schultz, it's kind of like a Jewish person driving a Mercedes-Benz. I don't see why anybody would do that. If I were a Jewish person, I'm just going to get off topic for just a minute, and I bought a Mercedes-Benz, I would take, the car is a nice car, but I would take the emblems off, the Mercedes-Benz emblems off of the car. Because What a lot of people probably don't know is that the designer of that emblem, his name was Adolf Hitler. That's right. Adolf Hitler designed, actually drew up that logo, that symbol. So if you're like a Jewish person and you're rolling down the road in a Mercedes-Benz, you should probably take that emblem off of there. Okay, but hey, we're off topic now. Let's get back to what we were talking about. So Debbie Wasserman Schultz, out there where the buses don't run, strains the boundaries of good common sense and credibility, but yet people keep going back to her and back to her and back to her all the time. So what do you think about Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan? Do they stand a chance? Right now, Paul Ryan is being described as a right-wing ideologue, an extremist. So that brings up the other question is, well, if he's a right-wing ideologue, an extremist, what the hell would they be calling Ronald Reagan right now? When did this whole terminology come into play? Right-wing ideologue, left-wing ideologue, extremist? If Ronald Reagan were president or running for president right now, that's what he'd be called. In fact, if Jimmy Carter were running for president, he'd be called that by Republicans. What is this labeling? What is going on here? Now, let's get back to something else I'd like to talk about, the polling numbers. Apparently, the polling numbers are all over the map here. First, they're juiced up beyond recognition. There's a whole lot of shenanigans going on, a whole lot of hanky-panky going on with the polling numbers. So one wonders, is the conspiracy true? That folks are putting out bogus poll numbers in order to give the public a sense of who's ahead and who's not and who's winning? Because on August 1st, the CBS New York Times Quinnipiac College poll, that's a mouthful, used a sample that was skewed so badly, it was borderline criminal. The polling sample was 36% Democrat and 27% Republican, when less than 3 months earlier, polling data indicated that the number should have been 31% Democrat and 34% Republican. Obama won this skewed poll 51 to 45. So if the correct sample distribution instead of a 12-point swing in the Democrats' favor had been used, Romney would have received 54% of the vote in this particular poll. But if that weren't bad enough, 10 days later, Fox News cited its own poll in which Romney was 9 points behind Obama. In this case, the sample was again skewed so badly that 9% more Democrats were polled than Republicans. And Fox News' Bret Baier looked befuddled as he reported the results, and the special report panel went on to treat them as if they were legitimate. So I think that Dick Morris is the only person we can go to. Dick Morris's polling data seems to be the most accurate, and who the hell would have thought that? Dick Morris is telling us that the polling numbers are not to be taken seriously in this case at this particular time. He's saying that Romney is far and away ahead. And then there's also polling data that suggests that if Barack Hussein Obama, the incumbent president, and Mitt Romney are even, tied, then that means that Mitt Romney is winning. I don't understand that logic, but I suppose it makes sense. The suggestion is that There's no way a sitting president who has all the resources of the White House and the bully pulpit and the bread, the money, should be tied with the presumptive Republican nominee. So now we'll see in a couple of days what the bump's going to be. So with that in mind, we'll take a short break. We'll come right back and we'll move on to our next topic. You're listening to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report with me, Dr. C. Robert Jones.
Thank you, Jerry. And we have one more example of the American formula for creating business and jobs that the White House has to begin to understand, and that's Renee Amore. Renee?
Thank you, Don. I appreciate it. And thank you to my fellow small business owners. I just want to say I'm Renee Amore. I'm the president and CEO of the Amore Group, a healthcare and business consulting group out of King of Prussia, Pennsylvania. And I have to say that I have over 50 employees. We have been in business for about 16 years now, and I'm happy to say that we have been blessed because of sacrifice. When the president made his comments last Friday about you got a business, you didn't build that, I don't know where the heck that he got that from. And to me, it was a reprehensible statement, and he doesn't know what the heck is going on in this country. President Obama's comments reflect just how unqualified he is to lead this real economic recovery. He really doesn't understand what it's about. This was insulting to me, and not just to me, to all the entrepreneurs on the phone and across this country. Mitt Romney knows that because he has lived it. He's helped entrepreneurs and dreamers start their companies like me. He has, you know, he doesn't practice the Chicago Star economics. You know, he doesn't just give to, you know, folks that raise money or those kind of things. This is getting out of hand. It's out of control. As an African-American woman, a woman, people think I need to vote for Obama because he's black. Well, I've been black a long time, and he won't get my vote because of the things that he has done. While his supporters get payoffs, the middle class, like me, American, I'm suffering. I don't want to have to lay off people, but other people have been laid off. I am creating jobs. He doesn't know how to create jobs. He knows how to get rid of jobs. Over 23 million Americans are out of work and unemployed or having given up looking because they just don't know what else to do. The income and wages have fallen. I worked very hard. I'm going to continue to work hard. He's not working hard at all, and he doesn't know what hard work means. My husband was diagnosed with Lou Gehrig's disease. I am the sole breadwinner in my home with my child. So the bottom line, this is survival for me and all my employees. And so I need to live around the White House.
Please don't miss The Situation Report with Doc Jones. The Sit Rep is information and entertainment in one short hour. It happens fast, so don't miss it. BlogTalkRadio.com/the-situation-report.
Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Supermarket Free Sample Guy.
Mr. Supermarket Free Sample Guy.
Though man dreads few things more than a trip to the supermarket, you offer us hope and sometimes a free mini wheel.
I love that freebie wheelie.
What exactly do you have? Aerosol cheese products? Deep-fried morsels. Who cares? If it's on a toothpick and it's free, it could be plutonium and we'd eat it.
It's all good, baby.
For a guy wearing oven mitts and an apron, you're all right. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light Titan of the toothpick, because you put the free in freedom.
Free.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Obama was in the recording studio. He's pulling out all the stops to try to make sure he is properly understood on all of this.
Who's the one who gave you success? How can you talk that way? Who's the one who built your business? else made that happen. You did it, through it alone, nothing's free, baby. You didn't make it without me. And I'm telling you, sonny, I'm the reason you're growing and thriving or shrinking and dying.
Network, Rush Limbaugh, and white comedian Paul Shanklin doing the vocal portrayal there, Barack Obama, and a cover.
All right, welcome back to the C. Robert Jones Situation Report with me, your host, Dr. C. Robert Jones. Hey, like Rush said, Paul Shanklin, he comes up with the greatest parodies I have ever heard, political parodies. To be specific, the man is a genius. A comic genius. A lot of you have not heard of Paul Shanklin. I have been listening to his parodies since 1989 when Rush Limbaugh first hit the national stage. I am a big Rush fan. In fact, I have Rush Limbaugh's No Boundaries ties that are no longer being sold because a lot of them, a lot of knockoffs came into play. So Rush stopped selling the No Boundaries ties. I attended Rush to Excellence tours. I even watched, and how many of you can say the same, that you watched Rush Limbaugh's TV show? A lot of you didn't know he had a TV show, did you? Because it was on for like, one season, but it was pretty good. He sat at a desk in front of the audience and just did his show pretty much that way and walked around, you know, Gallagher style, if you know who Gallagher is. And did anybody know that Gallagher had a twin? And a lot of times Gallagher was doing his show in one state while his twin brother was doing the same show in another state. And they pulled in quite a bit of bread that way because a lot of people didn't know that Gallagher had a twin. Does anybody know what the hell I'm talking about? Okay. NBC News. Oh, we've got a caller on the line, so we'll get to our call in just a minute. Just a minute. Not a second. Like, don't you hate it when folks say, oh, just give me a second? And the second's like gone before you said second, and it's like 10 minutes later. What is that all about? Nevertheless, on a special broadcast of MSNBC's Hardball on Saturday, weekend morning host Melissa Harris Perry expressed her displeasure with the selection of Wisconsin Rep. Paul Ryan as Mitt Romney's running mate. In particular, Harris took issue with Ryan quoting Thomas Jefferson, in which he declared that our rights come from God in nature and not from government. I quote, "The thing I really have against him is actually how he and Governor Romney has misused the Declaration of Independence," she said. She said, "I'm deeply irritated." She's deeply, how the hell are you either irritated or not? Can you be mildly irritated? I suppose. Would you just be pissed? Or would you be mad or angry? How can you be mildly irritated or deeply? She's deeply irritated. She's probably deeply irritating. She said, I'm deeply irritated by their notion that the pursuit of happiness means money for the richest and that we extricate the, listen to the clip. Listen to this woman. Just listen to what the hell? Nevertheless, listen to the woman.
That is a good thing to have against him, but the thing I really have against him actually has to do with both how he and Governor Romney have misused the Declaration of Independence today. I am deeply irritated by their notion that pursuit of happiness means
money.
That it means money for the richest and that we extricate the capacity of ordinary people to pursue happiness. When they say God and nature give us our rights, not government, that is a lovely thing to say as a wealthy white man. But when you sit in a body like mine as an African-American woman, you know that God and nature may have in fact made us inalienable rights of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, but we could not have them until there was a civil war that allowed a federal government to impose that those nature and God-given rights would actually be respected by our government. And I think they cannot continue to go down this line on the Declaration of Independence.
You mean the American Revolution continues as we speak?
You think?
Yeah, I, that's my speech. I give up. It's not as good as you, but I say it all the time. This revolution continues, and the battle...
All right, I've heard some stupid, asinine things, but that made absolutely no damn sense. None, mind you, and I'm serious about this. That made no sense whatsoever. When Paul Ryan said our rights come from God and nature, that's it. And for her to go back and say something about, something about racism and civil war and all that shit, that's crazy talk. Because what the hell? She's just holding on. She's holding on to a period in time in our history, in our dark history, that doesn't exist anymore. Did anybody tell this crazy lunatic woman that we have a black president in the White House right now? We're not back in Civil War days. We're not back in step and fetch it and slavery times right now. That there are some really rich black folks walking around? A whole bunch? Number myself as one? There are folks with plenty of money walking around here. Black. The president is black. Oh, and by the way, unemployment in the black population is at 14%+, lady. What the hell was that really all about? Damn. We'll take some calls right now. Caller, you're on 410, area code 410. You're on.
Hey, how you doing? This is Ray calling from Baltimore.
Ray, how you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, but I think you're misunderstanding.
Okay.
The point that she was making.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell that because the argument that you're making against what she said is completely different than the argument that Mark Levin was making against what she said, just about 15 minutes ago.
Okay.
Mark Levin's argument was that she was saying that that we shouldn't have a Declaration of Independence at all, that she was attacking the Declaration of Independence, which, makes no sense whatsoever. It was obviously not what she was arguing. He was, building a straw man, which is stupid. But, your argument is completely different, that she's trying to drag us back to slavery times, or I guess just, not acknowledging the progress in the country since the Civil War.
Well, that's what I'm saying.
What your argument seems to be.
Well, yeah, it isn't. She isn't acknowledging that we live in a different time right now. And the majority of states, when the Declaration of Independence was drawn up, opposed slavery. They wanted to abolish it.
Well, the thing about it is, though,
yeah,
is the point that she is making, at least the point that I heard her making, was that, lofty rights are fine, but they don't mean anything without enforcement, and you don't have enforcement without government, okay? So that means that your right to fair housing, your right to equal pay, your right to equal, you know, treatment of the laws, that's not secured for you by the plants, the tree, the sea, or private industry. It's secured for you by, you know, the EEOC, the federal government, the state government, local authorities, because when your rights are violated, you don't pick up the phone and call Best Buy, right? You normally, okay, you normally call some arm of government to help enforce the rights you believe you have. So if a cop, you know, beats your ass tomorrow with a nightstick, I assume you're going to call a lawyer and take your ass to court and exercise your rights under our, you know, judiciary system. So, you know, you turn to government to enforce those rights.
Right, but
and
here's the thing.
Without government, you could not have it.
The government is not.
I think there's a point.
Yeah, and I got that, and I understand what you're saying. But we're here, but the government is of the people, for the people, by the people. The people are the government. We make up the government. The government is made up of citizens like us, elected by citizens like us. There's no separatist situation here. It's not like the government is.
I don't think she was saying it, but I think. You know, it's you get to a point of idiocy where you debase the value of the government. We can't have a country without a government. So for the people out there who are like kind of like pining away for anarchy, it's not going to happen, okay? You need a certain level of government to have the country function. So to make the claim that all of government is evil, that suggests if we got rid of all of it, all of a sudden utopia would arise in the middle of the country.
But do you think that – okay, all right, I'm sorry to interrupt you. Let me just ask you this, though. Do you think that that's what – Paul Ryan meant by that, or could it be that he meant, as I took it, that the government doesn't give us rights, the government doesn't decide what rights we get to keep and what rights we need to give up. It's about the people, for the people, by the people, all of that. Do you think maybe that's what he was saying, or what she thinks she was saying?
The rights aren't present until they're recognized. You know, by the government to sort of say that they find their origins in natural law or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, in 1965, black people couldn't marry white people. Okay, and that was the law of the land. And whether or not there was some natural right out there that existed beyond what was on the books that should have allowed black people to marry white people, the simple fact of the matter is, you know, Loving v. Virginia, you had the Virginia State Attorney General before the Supreme Court arguing that black people marrying white people was an unnatural act, was corrosive to the culture, was confused children, yada, 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 yada. It's a state issue. Federal government stay out of it. You know, it took the Supreme Court striking down that statute in order for that right to emerge. So it was the government that gave black people, black people the right to marry white people.
You know
after
what?
After the Supreme Court ruling, you wouldn't have that today.
I think where we disagree, and I concur with everything that you're saying, except the way that it all, the origins of it. I think because what I believe and what I know to be true is that even the rights that we have, such as to marry a white woman if we want, or black man, or you know whatever, those. The consent has to be from the people. The government is not all powerful. We have seen governments come and go and be overthrown by the citizens. And don't think for a second that can't happen here. That the majority of the people can't rise up and go to the White House and toss Barack Obama's ass out on his ass, because they could. There's enough of us to do that. And I'm not citing sedition or anything like that. I'm really pointing out the fact that it's the people who give the government its teeth, its power. So the majority of the people decided what the rights of blacks and everybody else is going to be, not the government.
Because the majority of the country did not support interracial marriage at the time of Loving v. Virginia was heard. So it's not correct to say the majority of the people gave black people the right to marry white people. In fact, the right of black people to marry white people was imposed on the country by nine guys wearing black robes.
No, and I agree with you. But what I'm saying is, if the government, if the people, the majority of the people didn't say, well, okay, then it wouldn't be. What is the government going to do? Marshal up an army to put down the people? To you know, get the army to go out and put people in their place? No, I'm saying that, yeah, nine guys in black robes said, this is how it's going to be. And the people got that news and said, okay, and that's it.
Not really in terms of integration. Didn't they have to actually put National Guardsmen in front of that school to get those four black girls in there?
Yeah.
And they had to bring in National Guardsmen with M16s?
Exactly. And if the people of that state had decided they weren't going to go along with it, those National Guardsmen would have got their asses kicked, and there would have been a whole big old deal going on, and we'd have the next Civil War in our hands. My point is, And I understand your point, and I agree with it to a great amount. My point is, the people have the power to decide. And we have decided in favor of all these things that you just spoke about. If we don't agree in mass, it's not going to happen. The government, they don't have any teeth. There's just a bunch of people, like you said, in black robes or a certain amount in Congress, a certain amount in the Senate, and the president.
I agree that, you know, the people of the government, you have to have the will of the governor, yada, yada, yada. But what I'm saying is, as a black man, you can't allow yourself, okay, to have your fate tied to the popular will of the people. I mean, this was the whole thing. What's the guy's name down there who won the Senate race or whatever? He's a son. What's his name? Rand Paul or whatever his name is.
Yeah, Ron Paul.
Yeah. Rand Paul. His son, right? Who was saying that? You know, he was against the Civil Rights Act, or at least the last portions of it that, you know, forced businesses to serve, you know, minorities under public accommodation laws, because in his view, if a business wants to discriminate, they ought to be able to discriminate. And he thinks eventually enough people not going there because they disagree with the views of the restaurant owner.
And I agree with that.
That doesn't make me less free, so I don't agree with that. Okay.
Here's the thing.
If I'm coming up a highway in the middle of Alabama somewhere, and this is the only place for me to get something to eat, I don't want to have to be driving 25 miles further because you think individual liberty should extend to the point where a person who runs a place of public accommodation can tell me my black ass can't have a sandwich and use the bathroom. I'm not interested in that much freedom.
All right,
you can always have more freedom. I can have freedom to stab somebody right now if I want to, but I'm not interested in that much freedom.
I tell you what, I don't agree at all. I agree with Rand Paul, Ron Paul, anybody else's Paul, that I should decide who I'm going to serve. If I don't like the shorts you're wearing, if you're wearing your pants around your ass, pants on the ground, you're looking like a fool with your pants on the ground, I can tell you, get the hell out of my store. You got to go. And I agree that store owners should not be forced to serve anybody, white, black, or any other color. And you know what? I had this conversation with some Democrats, with some liberals, over last November, during Thanksgiving in South Carolina. We were all together, and we were spending the holiday together. And a lot of these black liberals, a lot of them intellectual people, and just regular folks, said that the worst thing that happened to black businesses, to the black people, was integration, was the civil rights movement. Because before that, we had our own businesses, we frequented our own businesses, we operated our own businesses, we were doing pretty good until we forced other businesses to do business with us. And then the black population pretty much lost out. So, you know, it goes both ways.
So, you want to live in a country, understand, you want to live in a country where you could make all the money in the world, but if you want to own property or buy property in a particular area, you can't, because you don't have a Fair Housing Act that forces a person to sell you the house or the property if you have the money.
No.
So you want to put up against your obstacle. So I got to go to college, go to grad school, make all this money. I want to own some beachfront property. I can't own any of the beachfront property in Virginia because all that was owned by white families who took it from whoever the hell they took it from and passed it to people who have it now. They don't have to sell it to me now, even though they're all selling their houses on the beach, selling them all for $3 million. I got $15 million. I can't buy a house where I want to buy a house, even though I did everything right, made all the money I had to make to get the house. Now I can't have it.
No.
Why would you want to live in a country like that?
I want to live in a country where if I want to buy another 100 acres of farmland from the guy who lives, I have a farm in Ramsey, North Carolina. I got 300 acres out there. Got it through, passed down from generation to generation. It's just my turn. If I want to buy the 100 acres on the farm next door to me, and it's owned by a white guy, and I give him a fair price for it, maybe even more, and I offer him a fair price for it, and he says, I don't want to sell it to you, nigga, because you're a nigga. I say, okay, and I'm done. I wouldn't want to force him to try to sell me his land because, he doesn't like me. Because
I'm getting taken. He don't even know what's going on.
But, you see, folks like you would say,
I know.
Oh, that's not fair. I'm going to go to the government and complain so they can force you to sell me your land because you're a racist. Just don't buy the land.
Why should I not buy? If I have the money and it's on the market, it's not just making him sell something that's not on the market. I'm not going in there and say, I'm not shaking him down. You better sell him. It's on the market. You
he
put
doesn't want
out.
To
you put a for sale sign on the front of your house.
Who
okay?
doesn't
it's
want
to sell it
because you're black? So
Hello?
Don't. Move on.
Hello?
Am I right? Hey, look, we got two minutes and 25 seconds left.
All right, then. I'm sorry, then.
Hey, no. I appreciate the call. I really do. Thank you very much. Go ahead, Maze, quickly. We got to go.
Yes, I know you ran out of time. I'm glad the caller called. He, at least it was a conversation, not chatter, about wrestling about the drug addict that you're so in love with. But I want to tell you what happened this weekend. I was down south, sitting in a hotel, watching when he said Paul Ram was going to be his next was going to be his VP.
Yeah.
And all these white men in the room just ran up to the TV. And when they said Paul Ryan, they didn't even stay to see what he had to say. They was just turned red as devils.
That mean they were happy or no?
No, they was upset.
They were upset?
If they were, like, not upset, they would have stayed to see what he had to say. They stopped eating, and they just
I wasn't happy either, Maze.
What?
I wasn't happy either. I was hoping for Marco Rubio.
I'm saying, like, they don't even like Romney. And then Paul Ryan is one of the ones in the Congress with the lowest numbers that he has ever been for the Congress.
Maze.
So now how are they going to be? Y'all got to get it together because they're going to be upset about him. The South is not happy.
I know. We got 1 minute and 17 seconds left.
So the South is not happy. I don't know what's wrong with these news people, media people. Talking around like,
Maze.
I don't see no change.
All right, Maze. I love you, girl. I really do appreciate my caller calling in 410. And I wish we could continue this conversation. I would really love to do so. Perhaps we'll pick it up again tomorrow and talk more about this subject because I think it's really interesting. I do. And I think the caller made some really great points. And I agree with most of what he said. Honestly, I do. But until tomorrow, we got to get out of here. Have a great night, folks. Oh, tune into 2020 Radio Network. Great show coming up. Please be there, B-Square, just after me, 2020. Maybe we'll pick this conversation up during his show in just a few minutes. We'll talk to you later, folks. See you tomorrow. Have a great night. We're out.
This is class warfare, this is whatever. No, there is nobody in this country who got rich on his own. Nobody.
If you've been successful, you're on your own. You didn't get there on your own.
You built a factory out there. Good for you.
If you've been successful, you didn't get there on your own.
But I want to be clear. You moved your goods to market on the roads the rest of us paid for.
Somebody invested in roads and bridges. If you got a business, you didn't build that. Somebody else made that happen.
You hired workers the rest of us paid to educate.
If you were successful, somebody along the line gave you some help. There was a great teacher somewhere in your life.
You were safe in your factory because of police forces and fire forces that the rest of us paid for.
You didn't get there on your own. I'm always struck by people who think, well, it must be because I was just so smart. There are a lot of smart people out there.
You didn't have to worry that marauding bands would come and seize everything at your factory and hire someone to protect against this because of the work the rest of us did.
It must be because I worked harder than everybody else. Let me tell you something. There are a whole bunch of hard-working people out there.
Now, look, you built a factory and it turned into something terrific or a great idea. God bless. Keep a big hunk of it. But part of the underlying social contract is you take a hunk of that and pay forward for the next kid who comes along.
Somebody helped to create this unbelievable American system that we had that allowed you to thrive. The internet didn't get invented on its own.
This is absolute lunacy, as are most progressive socialist ideals. Parents paid for my teachers and the roads and the police and the firemen when I was a kid, as did their parents when they were kids. Now I pay for the teachers and the roads and the police and the fire and all of the other services that these two socialists may wish to include. All of those people were compensated for conducting their duties as they were hired to do. Who owns a thing that I create? Not one. What I create is mine. What they create is theirs. And if any of these boobs have one of Obama's newly created overcompensated government jobs and thereby create nothing,
no. You built that business, but Barack says no. Built that business.
Well, Bessel, you didn't get that.
You built that business, but Barack says
you,
no.
You didn't get that on your own. You know, there are a lot of wealthy, successful Americans who agree with
a lot of smart people.
If you've got a business.